What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, the show about... Nope, see, I already forgot it. I was going to try to do the intro off memory, and my memory is that bad.
See, I know we said quote-unquote educational. I know that was part of it.
Automotive news and entertainment show...
The automotive news and entertainment podcast.
Podcast.
About grassroots racing.
Where we give you ways to get out and... race? This is terrible. I can't believe I am fucking this up quite so much, but that's all right.
This is why we always have the script up.
Yeah, see, this is I gotta have the script.
Yeah.
I'm like Ron Burgundy. I need to read what's on the screen. I'll read whatever is on the
whatever
screen.
Whatever the teleprompter shows.
Yeah,
you.
Exactly.
Go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Anyways, heretics, we are back once again, and we got more news.
Yeah.
The news train just never really stops, it seems like.
I mean, it's a good thing, because otherwise, what else will we talk about?
This is true. I have this weird feeling one day that, like, we're going to come here and be like, there's no news. Nobody in the automotive world did anything.
Nobody?
Yeah. But luckily, we can always at least rely on Elon Musk, like, sending out some stupid tweet or something like he did a couple days ago.
And we can talk about that for an hour.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily. How many Elon Musk podcasts are out there?
Oh, God, there's got to be so many. I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even want to look.
Right? Yeah. It would just make me feel bad. But no, we're not going to talk about Elon Musk. Instead, I want to start the episode today talking about something I'm actually really excited for, Gran Turismo 7.
Which, these trailers look great.
They really do.
I mean, you know, it's hard to tell what a video game is going to look like by looking at the trailer, because they can make a trailer look amazing.
Right. It even said right in the beginning, you know, that it's a mix of in-game footage and just, like, cutscenes, basically.
But even the in-game footage, it looked cool. You could see that the driver demoing on what was the name of the track, you said?
Oh, Trial Mountain.
Trial Mountain, yeah. Yep. You could see that the driver was understeering a little bit, and it was... It looked like the car was behaving like it should.
Right.
Like, they had a little bit too much steering in, and the car was starting to scrub speed going into corners.
Yeah. And that is one thing that, just in general, like, video games trying to convey driving, then if you can do it in a visual medium, you know, because if you're not even playing and you can kind of tell what's happening on screen, that's really good.
Yeah.
But I'm also expecting, of course, really good force feedback for wheels. You know, my wheel setup is actually a PlayStation wheel setup, so it's perfect.
That is perfect.
I need to get a PlayStation 5 somehow, or a PS4, because this game will somehow be PS4 and PS5.
You know, I think Sony, they still realize it's hard to get a PS5.
Yeah.
And luckily, they cross-platform pretty effectively.
They do, yeah.
So I'm excited about that. I have seen some of the online games with my PS4 slowing down.
Yeah.
Especially with the new software update that allowed it to cross-platform. Load times for Grand Theft Auto are taking a little bit longer. Call of Duty's taking a little bit longer. Really, I think the streaming services were most affected, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. That just seems to be Sony's thing. My PS3, I used that thing for a long time, well after the PS4 was out. But it seems like every update made that worse.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a shame, because it's not like you can just choose not to update.
No, not on PlayStation. It just will not work.
Yeah, you won't be able to access anything.
Yeah, so, but if you can get your hands on a PS5, I think that's going to be the way to do it, because the graphics in this are, as usual in Gran Turismo fashion, very good. I feel like Gran Turismo is always focused a lot on visuals. You know, I remember when Gran Turismo 2 came out, and I was like, these cars look real. How are they ever going to make graphics better than this?
Isn't it hilarious how every new generation, they seem to get to the level where you're just like, oh my God, it looks like real life. We finally gotten to the point where graphics have hit their peak.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've gone back and played Gran Turismo 2.
Yeah.
There's a video on our YouTube channel where I go back and I play some Gran Turismo 2. It looks like garbage. Even, like, I'm running an emulator, so it's, like, upscaled and, like, nice and stuff. I can't imagine what that looked like on a CRT.
Oh, man, that was the prevailing television then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and everyone was still obsessed with it.
Right.
And, you know, the same could be said for Forza. I didn't switch to PlayStation until a couple of years ago, so I was a pretty hardcore Forza player.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Forza 3 came out, everybody's like, oh, these graphics will never be beat.
Right.
And now we're at Forza 7 and set up on the sim rigs at work, and I can literally watch the breeze blow through the blades of grass from my desk, which is 15 feet away from the screen.
So I will say, because I was playing on those sim rigs, that was my first time with Forza, what was that, that's 7?
Yeah, it's Forza 7.
When you get up to speed, the wiper blades bounce on the windshield.
I never noticed that.
It's such a weird detail to add, but it's awesome.
Yeah, that's really, really minute.
Right, but it's that little visual detail that you don't really notice, but it gives you that more sense of speed.
Yeah, and if you've ever been on a track, that happens.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in an older car.
Right.
You know, those things weren't designed aerodynamically.
No.
try to go over 100 miles an hour in anything from the 90s.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, yeah. It will do it.
But... It'll do it, but you're not going to feel that safe about it.
Right. Oh. But for me, I've always been a PlayStation kid. I've owned an Xbox briefly. But and then growing up playing Gran Turismo, I always say Gran Turismo is one of the reasons I'm into Japanese cars in the first place. So with this reveal trailer of Gran Turismo 7, which if you haven't watched it, just get on YouTube onto Sony's page, and they did a whole conference showing off all sorts of games. New God of War also looks great. But you can watch this trailer, and they really are trying to appeal to the people like me that grew up and Gran Turismo 2 was that game for them. I feel like Gran Turismo kind of got away from things for a little bit. The latest one, Gran Turismo Sport, was just like, it was all just like high-end sports cars. The selection wasn't there. There was like hardly any tuning at all.
You said Porsche still wasn't represented, right?
I don't know if Porsche was in that one or not, but they are... very predominantly showing Porsche in this trailer to be like, hey, look, we got Porsche. Because it was like a big thing when Forza got them.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the Forza 4, when it came out, there was no Porsches in it. The workaround was that RUF was in it.
Yep, same with Gran Turismo 2. You can get some RUFs in that.
Yeah, but Porsche didn't want to give their rights out for video gaming, and then I think they realized what a monumentally stupid decision that was.
Right. Well, I think for a long time, the Need for Speed franchise held the... exclusive rights to Porsche.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's what the problem was.
See, and that's interesting because you think Need for Speed, you think imports. You think like Street Tuner, which they have high-end stuff.
But... Now you do. But like the first three, until Need for Speed Underground, it was all high-end.
It was all high-end sports cars?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think the original Need for Speed was like a Porsche, a Ferrari, a Viper, a Corvette.
Wow. So all high-end stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm thinking like Need for Speed Carbon
right.
era, and Need for Speed Shift, which was a really cool kind of departure from the franchise where they were trying to get into the Forza Gran Turismo market.
Yep.
It was more of a sim than a street racing game.
I think Shift was the one, because then there was Pro Street 2 as well.
Yeah, I think that came out after, right? That was after Shift 2, I think.
Okay, yeah. I liked the Pro Street ones. Shift, I actually ended up sending back because I could not get that to work with my wheel.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay.
I actually returned that whole game. I think I bought it online. Like, is that a downloaded game? I don't even remember how I returned it, but it would not work with the wheel, period. End of story. I had like the Logitech. Oh, man. I think it was the wheel that came out with Gran Turismo 3.
Okay.
So it was a pretty old wheel. It was like one of the first force feedback wheels, though.
Okay.
I had a little shifter on the side of it.
Actual shifter.
But it was like just an up-down sequential shifter.
Okay.
It was like built into the wheel, just this little thing on the side.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
It was neat. It was weird. It didn't have a clutch pedal at all.
So you just kind of flick it as if you had a flappy pedal gearbox.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which I think Shift was designed really for the controller.
It really was.
Like, because the way it was set up, you would shift with your bumpers.
Yeah.
So it did give you an immersive feel as much as you could with a controller in your hands.
Yeah.
I remember being really excited about it because I could shift up and down with my left and right bumpers. And, you know, I would have to hold the controller differently for it.
Yeah.
But it was really engaging. I think I wore out that Shift demo that came out for free.
Oh, really?
There were like three races you could do. And by the time I got the game, I knew those tracks like the back of my hand.
Nice. Where are we talking about Need for Speed now? After?
Because they had more... because of Porsche. Yeah, because Porsche didn't give their rights out for a while.
Right. That's what we were talking about. So the beginning of the Gran Turismo trailer, though, they're like, hey, look, Porsche. Like, we got that. And also in that trailer, I saw they have Ferrari and stuff now, which I haven't played the last couple Gran Turismos because, like I said, they kind of got away from what that game was for me. So they may have had Porsche and Ferrari for a while now.
Yeah.
But don't know, those ones didn't appeal to me. But this trailer, like I said, they're really appealing to, like, hey, you liked Gran Turismo 2, right? Like the Calsonic Supra, the Pennzoil GTR R34 from like the JGTC racing stuff. You know, those are like the hero cars of Gran Turismo 2, and they're predominant in this trailer.
Which is really cool that they know that they know that people want that, and they're trying to go back to it. I'm looking forward to it. This will be my first foray into the Gran Turismo franchise.
Yeah.
So when this comes out in March, I'll pick this up. Because as we were talking about before, Grand Theft Auto just doesn't cut it for racing.
No, it's not. That's definitely not a racing game.
Yeah. Now they do a decent job considering how versatile it is, but it's not a dedicated racing game.
No. So yeah, me, like I said, being a kid that grew up Gran Turismo 2, I'm hoping they go back to, you know, they showed off the tuning stuff. You can do all the tuning. They have actual like bodywork tuning you can do now. I think. I've gotten my hopes up for a Gran Turismo game multiple times in the past. This is why I haven't played the last couple, because they burnt me. So I'm cautiously optimistic about what this game looks like.
It sounds like the best way to go forward.
Yeah.
I'd say the key to happiness is low expectations.
It is. And before, you know, anybody goes out and pre-orders this game, don't do that. Don't fall for pre-orders. Never pre-order a video game.
You'll always be able to get the game.
Yeah, it's a game. You download them now. There's not a limited supply of them.
Yeah, which that is hilarious that people will pre-order when they don't even go to the store anymore.
Right.
It's like, I understand doing it for, you know, I bought the midnight release for Halo 2 when I was in high school. I waited in line.
Yeah, because you wanted to be one of the first ones to do it, and that was the only way to do that.
Right, you couldn't just wait at midnight and go do it. I will say, though, that
it is raining outside.
If you're going to do midnight release, Walmart, that's the best way to go, because nobody waits in line at Walmart.
This is true.
And they're open anyway, in most parts of the country.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be open anyways. That's true. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's just, it's full sunshine outside and raining. Welcome to Colorado. Gotta love it. Hopefully that cools it off a little bit.
Yeah, that's honestly, it's been kind of wild with the wildfire smoke.
Yeah.
Because it'll get gloomy and cloudy and gray for days because the smoke is causing enough condensation nuclei to, providing enough condensation nuclei to create rain clouds.
Yeah.
And then when it finally rains, you can breathe for just a minute.
Right.
Because all of the debris is, it's all acid rain now.
Right. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great for our paint.
Yeah. 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 Not so great for the paint on your car.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all acid rain. It's all out of the air. It's on, you know, it's in your parking lot and your soil now. But at least you can breathe.
Right.
Yeah.
And as humans, it's a requirement.
It is. It's a requirement.
We need to breathe. Yeah, speaking of, like, not good for paint, I just got back from, like, a 2,000-mile road trip. And I think my paint on the Fiesta took a bit of a hit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I'll have to clear off the like layer of bugs first to check, but
hey, if there's a layer of bugs with acidic blood, it's not going to look so great.
It's probably not great.
Yeah.
It's the Fiesta's gotten to the point now where I'm like, yep, it's a race car. Like I'll keep it nice, but it's never going to be pristine at this point.
That's fair.
Too many rock chips and just, you know, rubber marks and all sorts of stuff.
That's the way it was with the BRZ after I drove it across the country too, because I did a 5,000-mile road trip over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I did an oil change, drove it for 2 weeks, then had to do another oil change.
Yep.
But yeah, the bugs and just, you know, parking in certain parts of the country
where
people ding you.
Yep.
You know, I still have a couple battle scars just from parking at a poke place in Albuquerque.
Really?
Yeah.
That sucks.
But, you know, it's never going to, the paint's not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, one day I might correct it and park it inside my living room.
And see, I go back and forth though, because it's like, just today, I went to the Kala Retro, which was an 80s and 90s car show, but also today, which I think was somebody's planning didn't work out very well there, was the Colorado Concours d'Elegance.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. That's at the Arapahoe Community College.
Yeah.
And I didn't go to that. It's a lot bigger, though. And that's where you can see some, like, ridiculous cars there. They had GT40s there the one year that raced at Le Mans.
Legitimately ran at Le Mans?
Yeah.
Wow, so that's where some of those cars are.
Yeah, I think they were from the Shelby Collection, which is in Boulder, I want to say.
Really?
Yeah, the American Shelby Collection, which we need to go there sometime.
Yeah, we do. I didn't know there was a Shelby Collection in Boulder.
Yep. But yeah, and it's just like, A lot of cars there, though, are like, you just like really meticulously maintained, you know, just like the paint is perfect. It's been perfect for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I'm just, when I was younger, I used to really love going to those shows and seeing those cars. And I still do in a sense, but I almost like feel bad when I'm there too.
Because those cars don't get to be cars anymore.
Right.
Yeah, they're just display pieces, which, you know, I'm glad that we get to see the history there.
Right, I guess, yeah, somebody needs to preserve them,
yeah,
for sure, because if nobody does, then there won't be any left.
And there need to be some examples that, unfortunately, don't get to live their lives as cars anymore.
Right.
So that we can see what cars used to look like.
But those ones become stories.
Yeah.
You know, like with my Fiesta, it's like at this point I'm attached to it because of the places I've been in it and the things I've done in it and the stories that come along with that.
Yeah.
You know? So
every scratch has a story.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know? And it just, I don't know. I'm of the opinion now that cars are meant to be used.
I mean I 100% agree. I don't ever expect any of my cars to be perfect.
No.
You know? And that is the downside when you get a new car, which I don't buy very many new ones. I did get my BRZ new. But yeah, it's like, oh, I don't want to even park it here.
Right.
I want to park it over there. Oh, get it out of the sun. Oh my God, is it scratched? Because when it's perfect, there's all this pressure to keep it that way.
Yeah.
And once it gets one bad door ding, or, you know, you hit one cone at autocross,
yep,
like I did a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, okay, all right. It's still amazing. And it's still the machine I fell in love with.
Yep.
But I don't have to baby it. It can live its life.
I think maybe I told this story on the podcast before, but I heard from a guy I know who does mountain biking that it was either him or a friend of his. I think it might have been a friend of his. Every time he builds a new bike,
like, oh, you'd, yeah,
out of new,
yeah,
parts, he goes and like throws it in the gravel.
Yeah.
Like, cool. Now I can use it.
Now I can bomb it through the woods.
Yep.
And if I fall off, I'm not, oh no, I scratched my new bike.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. You got to use that stuff.
And I think it's true for anything. I've heard some people say that about guitars too, musicians.
Yeah.
Look at a shiny new guitar with no scratches on the pick guard.
Yeah.
And the first thing they want to do is scratch it up with their keys.
Oh, okay.
So that they can use their guitar.
Right. It's such a weird human thing, isn't it?
That we want to keep things perfect.
Like if a thing is perfect, we want to keep it perfect.
Yeah.
But as soon as it's not perfect, okay, yeah, we can use it.
We can use it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I could see that being a beneficial thing from an evolutionary standpoint for a little while. Preserve something as long as you can.
True.
You know.
You know, yeah, there's some sort of preservation thing because, like, goods were rare.
Yeah. One, know? And I mean, in our case, preserving, like, landscapes and nature.
Yeah.
It's like wanting to keep, like, you were in Yellowstone.
Right.
Not, you know, surface mining Yellowstone National Park.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we want to keep it perfect.
I mean, I think Yellowstone National Park keeps itself from being mined by the fact that it's a giant volcano.
It is a giant volcano that will one day blow up and consume us all.
Yes. Hopefully sooner than later. At least, see, we're close enough here that, like, we'll die pretty quick.
That's true. We won't have to live through the ash cloud.
Yeah, that's going to be the shitty part.
We'll be incinerated instantly.
Yeah.
In 2012, we're, you know, Woody Harrelson on the mountaintop.
Wait. I don't know what the reference is.
That movie, 2012, with Joan Cusack?
Okay, yeah, that's...
It came out in, like, 2008 or 2009, and it features Joan Cusack avoiding all sorts of disasters.
I've seen
in
the movie.
Various types of vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time an airplane takes off, the runway collapses under the wheels.
Yes. So that movie is on Netflix, and I almost watched it the other day.
It's a hilarious movie.
Right? And then they build an ark at the end.
Yeah. They built a bunch of arcs in China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like, what?
And then they, you know, sailed out on the arcs with what was left of humanity.
Yeah. And it becomes Waterworld. That's it. Is that movie actually a prequel to Waterworld?
It's a prequel to Waterworld.
That will always be a canon in my head.
That should be. Kevin Costner is out there somewhere growing gills.
there's a place up 25 when you're going north there.
Okay.
I think, yeah, it's the water park.
How far north?
Just north of Denver there.
Okay.
You're not out of the metro area yet.
Okay.
But there's a water park up there called Waterworld.
Really?
And I'm always really disappointed when I don't see... What's his name?
Kevin Costner.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to see Kevin Costner.
He's very forgettable.
Unfortunately. He did some good roles, though.
Yeah, back in the day, he was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the postman.
Yeah.
And he was in Waterworld. I know he was in a lot of other stuff. I can't think of it, like any movie titles right now.
Was it Costner that was in Roadhouse? Who was in Roadhouse?
That was Swayze. Yeah.
Right.
Because he always played the relatable, like Patrick Swayze was like the big buff guy, but Kevin Costner always played the relatable tough guy.
Yeah, that's
He's
true.
Like, oh, okay, in Waterworld he can kick your ass, but only because you've seen him perform these incredible feats of skill. It's not like he himself appears to be intimidating.
This is very true. Yeah, he doesn't have that physique.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to our 80s action movie podcast.
Well, I'm down for that.
I would be down for
that. That would be a great pot. Let's do it. I mean, obviously, we start with Terminator 1.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm way down for that.
So we just rewatch movies and then talk about them?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, cool. So we'll look forward to that podcast from us coming up soon.
Cinematic of Speed.
And if we're doing that podcast, that's actually a pretty good segue because somewhere along there, we'll probably watch Mad Max.
Yeah, we have to watch Mad Max
and
Road Warrior. And there was even a third one with Tina Turner.
Was there?
Yeah, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Oh, yeah, Beyond Thunderdome, of course. In Sturgis, their event center is called Thunderdome.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a Thunderdome?
No.
Okay, good, because if 500,000 bikers rode up and there was an actual Thunderdome, somebody would be dead by the end of that weekend.
I mean, I guarantee somewhere in the Sturgis area during Bike Week, there is a Thunderdome happening somewhere. It's a secret Thunderdome.
It's like, all right, these two guys are going to fight to the death with chains. And go.
And go, yeah. But, and of course, there's those three movies. And then there's the newest one, Fury Road.
Yes, which sadly.
Is an awesome movie, in my opinion.
You liked it?
I liked Fury Road.
See, I like the action sequences. And I like that they brought in more female heroes.
Yeah.
But I feel like there wasn't much of a story there compared to the old Mad Max movies.
No, it's in my opinion, The Fury Road is a metal opera with fight scenes.
Okay, looking at it that way, from that perspective, I like it more. It's like you were saying, think of Tokyo Drift as an anime.
Yeah.
And oh no, it's amazing now.
Yeah.
It's an amazing, was it a great movie? No, but it's an amazing anime.
Right, exactly. If you change your perspective, what you go into that, it's different.
Okay.
And if you are a giant fan of that movie, Lloyd's Auctioneers and Valuers is selling the movie cars.
All of the, wow, they're all there.
Yeah.
That is so cool. I want the truck.
Oh, the Doofwagon?
Yeah.
Which is the weirdest name, but that was the one.
That's what it's called?
Yeah, the Doofwagon. I think, if I remember correctly, the guy had played the guitar, like the flaming guitar.
Yeah, yeah, he was strapped to the front of this thing.
I think that guy's called Doof.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? That makes me feel better because I always thought that that guy got the short end of the stick. Like, he was clearly loving his job, but he was also the grill of this truck.
Oh, this guy right here, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like speakers, flaming guitar, like, but yeah, if you want that truck, the actual truck, you can bid on it.
The starting bid is only $1.
Yes. I kind of want to go through and put $1 on each one.
Yeah.
Just in the off chance, there's like some weird glitch on the website.
Yeah.
You know, where people can't bid after that or something.
Yeah. And then we'd have to sue to get it for $1.
We would, but.
But it'd be worth it.
Right. I would go through with that.
Dude, we could put Religion of Speed logos all over that thing.
I think, though, the one I want the most is it on here? Oh, yeah, the Giga Horse. This thing, that was the main villain's, like, big monster truck car. It was, like, two Cadillacs stacked on top of each other. Yeah.
And that guy looked... That was a stylized villain, like in a world of stylized villains. Like,
right.
Because in Road Warrior, Humongous looked terrifying the first time you see him.
Yeah.
But this guy, next level. Like, he's got tubes coming out of his face and his jaw is removable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, when the mask mandate started, I started trying to find masks to make me look like this guy, but I didn't want to wear the giant tubes on my head.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And see, that's the thing. We're going to do our movie podcast briefly here because that's one thing I actually liked about the movie is they don't really explain anything.
No, they don't.
And to me, that I like that because they kind of leave it up to your imagination, like of how these things got here. Who is this villain?
Right.
Like, why is he in charge? Like, you know, yeah. I kind of like the fact that they didn't movies these days kind of try to spell everything out for people because least common denominator, they have to appeal to the stupidest people.
That's a fair point.
You know, and I like it when it's, there's an air of mystery about everything.
So you like the fact that they left a lot of the story out.
Yeah.
Which, if you think of it as like a metal opera, it does come across like that.
Right.
It's just, I was such a big fan of like what I guess would now be considered the boring parts of the old Mad Max and old Road Warrior movies, where there's just no non-diegetic music and it's just Mel Gibson staring at the desert.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to think about what's going on in his head. You know, it just seems so real. It's like, okay, that's what the apocalypse would actually be like. It'd be a whole lot of dude in a leather jacket staring at the desert, trying to figure out what his next move is.
See, I feel like this was just like, because at some point I think people broke down the fact that Mad Max makes no sense. Like,
because like a world without gasoline and then the apocalypse happens and then all the means of torture are gasoline powered.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody drives these big V8 cars and that consume a bunch of fuel. And it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
None of that makes sense. So it's like, okay, well, if we're going to suspend all disbelief anyways, let's make a fantastical.
Let's just go completely onto the absurd.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense. You know, in the third movie, the one with Tina Turner, all the cars are powered by pig shit.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they make a fuel. They synthesize it from pig shit.
Scientists, get on that.
Yeah.
Where is our pig shit fuel?
And so that was a little bit better, but it was still, you know, there was like a tiny guy riding around on a giant guy.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what their names were, but they went together. It was like Des and Stroy or something like that.
Yeah. It was like,
It was Master and Blaster. That's what it was.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the little guy was Master, and the big guy was Blaster.
It's just, it reminds me, like, what came out first? Thunderdome or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with Craig?
I don't know.
With the brain and the belly, you know? You remember Craig from
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Okay, hold on. TMNT.
Our references are getting so deep.
Krang.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This guy. Yeah.
Yep.
Who controlled the guy from the inside.
Yeah. I don't know which one inspired the other one, but they're clearly very similar.
Right? It's very similar. Like, even Krang's, like, whole, like, get-up is very Mad Max. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were inspired by Mad Max.
Yeah, I want to look up which one came out first.
Right.
Because Beyond Thunderdome, I think, was the late 80s. Because Mad Max, the first one, was in the 70s.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I'd be curious. Also, little side note, you know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a quote-unquote spin-off of Daredevil?
What?
Mm-hmm.
So, Marvel's Daredevil?
Yeah. So the chemical spill that caused Daredevil to lose his eyesight is the same chemical spill that went into the sewers and transformed the turtles into the Ninja Turtles.
And Master Splinter.
Yes.
That's amazing. I want to see now, you know, everybody's talking about Matt Murdock. He's supposed to make his MCU debut soon.
Okay.
At some point, people are speculating that he's going to be Spider-Man's lawyer in No Way Home.
Okay. Is it going to be the guy from the Netflix show?
So that's also up in the air.
It better fucking be.
It better be.
He was so good.
He killed it, right?
Yeah.
And as long as Ben Affleck doesn't show up, then we're doing okay.
Right?
Yeah, that would be awesome. But yeah, people are speculating that he'll be Spider-Man's lawyer in No Way Home, but none of that's been confirmed.
That would be a good...
And No Way Home literally is universe-breaking.
Yeah.
They got the... we're Marvel podcast.
Yeah.
they got all the villains from the Tobey Maguire movies, or a lot of them. Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield have signed contracts.
Yeah.
Jamie Foxx played Electro in the Andrew Garfield movies. So they're going to have a universe combining Spider-Man movie, which can retcon a lot of the Fox properties that Disney recently acquired into the MCU. They're saying that between the Doctor Strange movie and the Spider-Man movie, we're going to have a lot of these universes crashing together.
Yep.
And Deadpool's already made his MCU debut. They did a little YouTube video.
And the guy.
And Korg.
I did see that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, technically in the universe now.
Technically canon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And weirdly, that was a preview for the movie...
Free Guy.
Free Guy.
Which I haven't seen, but it looks really good.
Yeah, it actually did look pretty good.
Yeah.
Wow, before we get too far off the rails with movie podcasts, right.
We have to do this.
Yeah, we need a new movie podcast. Yeah. I've actually thought about that before. And so there's a lot of complaints in like movie review circles of it's too many middle-aged white dudes doing movie reviews, which is fair because it's a lot of middle-aged white dudes
doing movie reviews. Which we're not middle-aged yet, so.
True. But
and I'm half black, so.
Oh, there you go. That's true.
Yeah.
Boom. Diversity. Because I wanted to call it another white guy's movie podcast.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
I mean, I'm white, so it's fine.
Yeah. You're another white guy. We can brand it like that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We need to move on. But speaking of other podcasts, we were talking about earlier about how many Elon Musk podcasts there are. This isn't going to become that. But real quick. Tesla Model S Plaid did set a Nürburgring EV lap record.
So an EV lap record.
Yeah.
Which I wonder how competitive that's been on the ring.
What was the lap? 735.
That's fast.
That's very competitive.
That is very fast. I remember a time when the internal combustion record wasn't that fast.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I think... Wasn't there a time when trying to get below like 8 minutes?
Yeah, that was what everybody was trying to do.
Wasn't the GTR the first one to do it?
Was it the
Porsche?
So it was the rivalry between the GTR and Porsche that I think drove the records to where they are now.
Yeah.
Which, does the Viper still hold the internal combustion record?
It might.
I think the Viper ACR, because it was back and forth with Porsche and Nissan for a while. And then, you know...
And Dodge was like, hold my beer.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's exactly what they said.
Quite literally, yeah.
Because it's like, well, anyone willing to take this rear-wheel drive V10 car around the track with no ABS as fast as they possibly can...
Right.
...can do it.
They probably could have done it earlier. They just had to find a driver to do that.
Find somebody willing to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is if you can manhandle that much car around the ring... You know, with the finesse it takes to get this record,
yeah,
then you can nail it. Two-wheel drive is amazing. Rear-wheel drive is amazing. It's just a matter of the driver being able to get the potential out of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because I think it was similar at Scuba for a while. It was like Evos and GTRs that were going back and forth for the record.
Yep.
I think the Cyber Evo held it for a while.
Yeah.
And then somebody in an FDR X7 set the record.
Oh, really?
53, yeah.
Jesus. So, one thing that's really interesting about this lap is, if you notice while we're watching this video, it's using the yoke. Remember how we were making fun of the steering yoke before?
That is funny. It is using the yoke, and that driver's just making it work.
Right?
He's not, I guess you can't shuffle steer when there is no wheel.
Yeah, but I was curious about this. Because, like, on a track, I guess it kind of makes sense. Because you don't really go more than, like, 90, you know, degrees on your steering wheel most times on a track anyways. Although there are some corners on the Nürburgring that I think you might have to.
Yeah, the carousel.
Right. I don't know. The carousel, you might not have to. It really depends on how fast your steering is.
Yeah, I guess the ratio on your steering.
So I'm curious what the ratio of the steering rack is in this, but...
Look at some of the angles he's holding his arms, though. You know he's stressing his shoulders.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's very comfortable doing this.
But it does prove that it works, I guess.
It does.
Of course, we know oval steering wheel works anyways. Formula One uses it. You know, any open-wheel racer has a... rectangle steering wheel.
That's true.
It's not like we know it doesn't work, and we know it works on a racetrack. Clearly, this guy's fucking flying. But what happens when you're in a parking lot?
That's fair. Which I guess maybe they're counting on Tesla owners to just have the car park itself.
Yeah, I guess, if we're getting to that point.
Because that's what I really thought about when I saw Tesla running the yoke like this. It's like, well, they're really not expecting most people to drive the car themselves.
Yeah, but it's not at the point where it can do all, like, it can't park itself.
Can it not park itself yet? I thought that they could parallel park themselves, right? Because I know Buicks can do that.
Yeah, but you kind of got to like set that up for them.
You got to get it into the right spot.
And yeah.
Let and the like, camera track the space and everything.
Right. Like, I don't think, as far as I know, Tesla's not at a point where you can just like pull into like the, you know, driveway of a parking lot and be like, I don't know, go find a spot.
when you let your car drop you off at the front and let it go find a space.
Like a legit valet mode. Yeah. Last time I checked, valet mode was like, hey, look, I can make my car come to me in a straight line.
But everybody get out of the way.
Yeah. You know, it was a party trick. It wasn't a real feature yet, as far as I know.
Tesla, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it's fine.
Tesla did have a great April Fool's prank they put up a few years ago.
Did they?
Where Elon Musk got out of his car and he's like, and your car will circle the parking lot trying to find a space. And if it can't find one, it'll parallel park. And now you can activate ticket avoidance mode. And it showed the Tesla actually using its sensors to see when somebody was putting a parking ticket on the windshield, and it would turn on the wiper and the sprayers. And if they kept trying to put the ticket on the windshield, the car would just drive off.
Just drive away.
And you get an alert on your phone. Ticket avoidance mode triggered, so it could pick you up behind the building.
I feel like that is something Elon would do.
Oh, yeah. I would love to do that.
Right?
I would park it in some of the most notorious parking cities in America just set up a GoPro.
Right? Just to play with them. Oh, that's hilarious.
God, this guy really is flying.
Right? I mean, we're halfway through this lap already, you know, and anybody who's driven the Nürburgring on any sort of sim knows that takes a while.
I love when you get telemetry in a video like this.
Yeah.
Like the accelerometer, that's great.
My only question is this, like, what is this actually showing? Is this first line 1G and the second line 2Gs? Like, there's no reference point, so I don't know how many G's he's actually pulling.
Yeah, quantitatively, I don't. But at least we know it's pulling more or less G's to the left or right, which is kind of cool. I like it when they give you a throttle and brake gauge, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good if you're especially, you know, watching videos to try to improve your own driving.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of the first place I ever saw professional racing drivers like slowly getting on the throttle and slowly getting on the brake, more so than you would think. Like, they're not like, you know, grandmaing it, of course, but I feel like a lot of times people get out on a track, they're like, mash the brake,
slam,
exactly, on off switch for everything,
which, you know, that's my look at the carousel.
There's carousel. He does have to go a little over 90 there.
Okay.
He was a little past 90, which did not look terribly comfortable.
Yeah, you can see when he has to have his you know, left or right arm basically, you know, vertical like that. It doesn't seem like you'd... I don't know how comfortable I'd feel controlling steering angle like that.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Forget drifting.
Sadly, I'm not a pro. Oh, drifting? I think I would actually love to see somebody drift this.
Right? Just, like, go to grab the wheel and it's just not there.
Yeah. Guys from Drift Alliance, if you're listening, I want to see a video of you guys trying to catch a yoke wheel that's spinning for counter-steer.
Just, like, slaps your hand out of the way. When I worked at Hyundai, so Hyundai Tiburon owners back in the day were some of the riciest car owners I've ever seen.
I remember prior to the Genesis.
Yeah.
I remember these guys.
These guys. So we had one come in that had Lambo doors. Well, not Lambo doors, you know, but the fake Lambo doors.
Right.
And he had taken the steering wheel and it was, you know, the wheel had four spokes coming off the sides on a wheel, and he cut off the top and lower part to make a yoke like this. And in place of the little stubs that were left for the wheel, he put they're like the little protectors you could put on like the bottom of table legs.
Oh, okay. That's smart because he probably made himself bleed a little bit.
Probably.
Yeah.
So he put those rubber things on it, which looked like shit. But then he had his yoke steering wheel. And I do like, so I have some experience trying to pull a car into a shop that with a yoked wheel.
Trying to get it on and off the lift like that.
Yeah, and it's impossible. Like, you just, like, this weird hand-over-hand, like, weird shit. Like,
yeah, which if you spend time on a track, hand-over-hand is, like, sacrilege. You just don't do it.
So, but hey, like I said, I think they really wanted to prove that the yoke works for whatever reason.
It would have been funny if there was, an internal argument at Tesla about the steering wheel for this lap.
Right. Also, I want to know what else they did to this car. Because clearly there's like a race pack dash on the dashboard here. Or on the steering column here. It's not, you can see the regular dashboard in the background of this video. There's like a race pack right there.
Yeah.
Is that a roll cage right there? What is going on
here?
That
does look like a roll cage with some foam on it.
But it doesn't have a crossbar, so I'm not sure what we're looking at there. I just want to know how prepped this car was.
But I wonder, with the Teslas, the way they're designed, I wonder if you have to go with a full cage. Like, does the guy who's running the Model 3 at GridLife, does he have a full cage in his car?
I have no idea. I think that's going to be dependent on your class, too, so. But, hey, you know, I'm not shocked that a Tesla holds that record. As far as fast electric cars, they're the best right now.
I think it's funny that they did it in a Model S.
Yeah.
Because it'd be cool to see them make a Nürburgring Edition Roadster.
So, when the Roadster... I'm curious what the Roadster's going to be like when it eventually
with its jet propulsion system.
Right?
Yeah.
Whenever that vaporware eventually comes out.
That's a good way to put that. Until we see what the jet engine looks like, it's vaporware.
Yeah. With Tesla, until I see it, I don't believe it. So... But that's all we're talking about Tesla right now.
See it all panel gapped up and everything.
Yes. See it in the flesh. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, since we're just shitting on cars anyways in general, time to shit on the new WRX.
Yep. It's or the baby Crosstrek.
Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
We'll be back in just a few. Welcome back, heretics. Or I guess I should say welcome back to us. Like, the listener never actually went anywhere, I suppose.
They listened to your anchor spot.
This is true. I need to record a new one of those. I have ADHD. I don't like just listening to the same thing over and over again. I'm sure other people don't like that either.
Yeah, so. They know that it plugs in, and yeah, I'm sure Anchor wouldn't mind it either.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So like I said before the break, where it's now that time of the show where we have to make fun of the new WRX.
Yeah, this thing is, it's a really, aesthetically it is a disappointment.
Yes.
It's a really ugly WRX. Like I said, the title of this article says it all. The 2022 WRX is a sports sedan that looks like a crossover.
Yes.
So the last thing we need are more things that look like crossovers.
Yes. Or, we do not need everything to be a crossover at this point.
No, we've got enough of them. And right. The WRX is a sports sedan. And now I'm actually applauding Subaru's media department. Because when we first commented on this thing, it was just a silhouette. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I could see was really the only thing I like about how this car looks. And that's the rear fender, the rear quarter, you get a nice shoulder, which gives it, you know, almost a coupe-like body line for something this size.
Well, and it you know, that rear fender is really flared too.
Yeah.
You know?
It's aggressive.
Yeah, but then they had to put hexagonal like black plastic wheel wells on it.
Yep, just like cladding. The Crosstrek.
It looks so much like the Crosstrek.
Yes. And the Crosstrek, you know, there's a lot of good things about the Crosstrek. How it looks isn't one of those things.
I was gonna say I'm struggling to find the good things about the Crosstrek, but
they say it's the perfect vehicle for Colorado if you don't care about driving or, you know, what you're driving or what you're seen driving at all.
Or going up the mountain in any sort of like brisk passion.
That's true.
Fashion.
Well, you can't drive with any passion.
This is true. There is no passion to this car.
The taillights do really look like a lot like the new BRZ. My friend pointed that out to me and they really do look like that.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was like, okay, at least they're trying to like kind of keep a company image.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In between those two cars, which is kind of nice. But I don't think they really work on this car at all.
They're too small.
They're too angular for how square the rest of the car is.
And I would have liked to see kind of a segmented taillight where there was a portion of it on the trunk.
Yeah.
Because clearly, you know, they end right at the trunk.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the same taillight assembly, honestly.
As the BRZ?
Yeah. It looks really close.
Hey, if that keeps the cost down to replacing the taillights...
True.
That's a good thing. Even if, you know, like, oh, hey, maybe this doesn't work aesthetically, but we only have to manufacture one set of taillights.
Right. But judging by what I've seen about the specs of this thing, it's not going to cost any less. Also, weirdly enough, it's not going to make hardly any more power or torque, even though it's got a 0.4 liter displacement boost.
Which, you know, this I believe this is almost the exact same tune that's in the Ascent.
Yeah.
It seems like it's putting out similar numbers. Which maybe this is them being conservative and not, you know, trying not to tread on the new STI.
Maybe. Well, what's the STI going to end up looking like then?
Oh, man. I hope that would they take the they take this and they just, you know, they you get body colored fenders.
Yeah.
And they can make the whale tail spoiler work with this thing.
Yeah.
I really want to see the STI look good because aesthetically this thing is a massive disappointment.
So the thing is for me, it's mostly the old WRX. Honestly, it's just the all the black plastic bullshit.
Yeah.
Like this white one we're looking at from Subaru's press release here. If you just kind of cover up the wheel wells, I think it's actually, you know, I like the front end.
Yeah.
The front end's pretty good.
If you made those body color and some more elements on the front bumper body color.
Yeah. The rear bumper is where it really loses it for me.
Yeah, that's a shame. And that actually looks like the black plastic on the BRZ, but it...
Oh, God.
Well, I knew the day would come where I forgot to silence my phone again.
Yep.
And there it is. But yeah, it looks a lot like the black plastic on the BRZ, but they made it...
It's huge.
Bigger. Yeah, yeah, it's just too
so
big.
Much. Yeah, like, everybody's kind of complaining. Like, it almost... Like, everybody's complaining about the Civic Type R when it came out. There was just, like, a lot going on in the bumpers and stuff. It's like, okay, wait, the Subaru did the same, but then they made it all black, so you can't really tell what's going on.
Yeah, it's busy when you get up close to it, but it's like they made all these designs and they don't want you to see them. It kind of hides.
Right. Yeah, I feel like it was just a very strange design choice in general. Because it's so close, in my opinion. It's so close. Also, it's like huge. Let's get that out of the way, too. This is the size of an old Legacy at this point.
Yeah, this thing's really big, which that's... I can't really fault Subaru for that. That's what the whole industry's doing.
Everybody does it, yeah. You know, I feel like every new car that comes out, we always complain about how much bigger it's getting. But
yeah, every new body style grows. But this whole, like, trying to... Because maybe the fenders are kind of what they're trying to do with the taillights, which is have a uniform brand image.
Right.
You know, but this isn't an SUV.
No.
And they shouldn't try to make their sedans look like SUVs, especially a sports car.
Like, to me, the black cladding makes it look taller.
Yeah, it does.
There's something about this that makes it almost look lifted.
Yeah, yeah, we were talking about that before the podcast. I don't know if it's the body styling or if this thing actually rides higher.
Right? I don't think it would.
Which I'm told that the turbocharged 2.4 is a fairly tall boxer engine.
Yeah, because the turbo is like down below.
Yeah, yeah, they mounted it really low.
Yeah.
Which was the reason they gave not for putting it in the BRZ.
Yeah, it was going to be too tall.
Yeah, which even the FA engine in the current WRX is taller. You know, when you add the manifolds, it's taller than the NA version that's in the BRZ.
Yeah, I don't know, but... In some potentially good news, you know, everybody complained about the way it looked in the launch, but Motor Trend did, Scott Speed, of all people, went and drove the car.
Okay.
And apparently had some pretty good things to say about it.
So he likes the way it drives.
Yeah.
So that's good.
So I will admit I didn't actually get through this whole article because I literally just saw this before we started recording, but... I mean, the title is 2022 WRX First Ride, still a white knuckle machine. So, you know, hopefully it still has that, you know, DNA in it, which,
yes.
I mean, I think it does. It look at it. It's the old WRX, yeah. Just updated.
I mean, it's still all wheel drive. It's still nearly 300 horsepower. It's still turboed. And they've taken great leaps in eliminating boost lag over the years.
This is true, yeah. That is one thing I complain about the power, but Subaru claims it's a broader torque curve.
Yeah, which I believe it. You know, especially comparing the newer, you know, FA motor versus the old EJ motor. They were a lot laggier in the older cars.
Yeah.
But
oh,
these,
yeah, so much more.
You get a lot more power down low. It honestly gives you kind of more of an NA power curve, which is nice.
Yeah, so hopefully that kind of is like a redeeming feature of that whole package.
Yeah.
You can still, of course, get a manual, thank God. CVTs are still going to be there.
Yeah, yeah, which that's kind of unavoidable at this point.
I think it is, unfortunately. You know, I'm... Like, this first picture on this Motor Trend article, like, that is a sharp-looking car in general. It's I think it really just comes down to these wheel arches.
And the bumpers.
And the bumpers.
Yeah.
Like...
There's too much black plastic, and the body color ends too abruptly.
Yeah, I think if the bumper was especially all orange on this...
Yeah, even if there's just this bottom lip was orange...
Yeah.
And they left the black as kind of an accent... I'd be okay with it if they cleared the fenders.
Right.
The fenders need to be body colored. And if they're going to have, you know, aggressive off-color fenders, then they need to actually look aggressive.
Right.
And not just be this black plastic that we see on the SUVs.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. The fenders aren't, like, aggressive enough, like you said, to really warrant even having, like, a fender flare, quote-unquote.
Right.
They don't pop out at all. But I just thought about this. This might be good for the aftermarket because that means these guys, they're plastic. They're clipped on there.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to design some fender flares that actually look a little bit better on there.
Yeah.
It'll be super easy to pop those old ones off, pop some new painted ones on, and completely change the look of this car.
And it'll be a really easy kit to install when somebody inevitably comes out with a kit.
Right.
People are going to be buying these left and right for their new cars because they don't want them to look like this.
I mean, here's the thing, though, and this is what kind of worries me. I'm worried these things are going to sell like gangbusters.
And you think this is going to become the new style?
I think this is going to be Subaru's new style. I think, because like we said, look at how many Crosstrecks they sell.
Right.
You know, people love that look.
They do.
But what's the biggest complaint about the Crosstrek?
It's got no power.
Got no power.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Mr. Customer, if you want to upgrade to our sporty one.
Right.
You know, this is a sales, it's an upsale.
It is.
This car is. It's an upsale from a Crosstrek.
And, you know, as a Subaru salesman, I upsold plenty of Crosstrek buyers to a Sense because they had turbos.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a $10,000 increase at minimum.
Yeah.
But people wanted to look at it because they wanted the boost. And in this case, you're right. That may be the case. I do think that it'll be a good upsale from the people who buy VR SUVs. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to do for the WRX buyers, though.
Yeah.
The people who didn't show up at the dealership to look at the Crosstrek.
I mean, I'd be curious to see a graph of WRX sales over the years anyways.
And see how they changed with various body styles.
Because I don't think WRXs are doing all that good as it is anyways.
Sedans have been down.
Yeah.
And sports cars have been down.
Yeah.
And this is a sports car sedan, so.
Yeah, so it's probably getting hit by both things. So maybe... Yeah. Maybe this is actually going to be the saving grace of the WRX. Maybe if they kept going down this path, it would have ended up Lancer Evo, you know?
Ooh, I don't want it to go that route.
Yeah.
Where we're looking at, you know, an electric crossover with the Lancer Evo name, and that's about all we got. Well, that was the
Eclipse
one. Like, oh, they did do that with the Eclipse.
Eclipse Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that was also a terrible idea.
Yeah. It was like...
Yeah.
Once again, it's one of those things. I always complain about people putting up badging on their car.
Yeah.
You know, because the people who know are going to make fun of you for it.
Yeah.
The people who don't know don't care.
Right.
You know, so why put the Eclipse name on there? Because the people who know what Eclipses are going to be mad.
Right.
And the people who don't give a shit what that thing's called.
Right. They would buy it if you called it a Mitsubishi Turd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Maybe just, you know, put a French-sounding suffix on the end of the Turd.
Unfortunately, in America, at this point, Mitsubishi is synonymous with Turd anyways.
That's true. They're really cheap cars. And,
yeah.
And honestly, I think the enthusiasts were what was keeping Mitsubishi in popular culture.
Yeah, in America at least. I feel like in Japan, they do better. But I really feel like Mitsubishi just regulated themselves to like, we are just going to make parts for everybody else. It's fine.
Yeah. Which is funny because, yeah, they make air conditioners and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a Zaibatsu. That's the term for that.
Haibatsu?
Zaibatsu.
Zaibatsu.
Yeah. We're a company that makes all sorts of different shit.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a Japanese thing. Started way back in like the 1800s, I'm pretty sure.
That's cool.
But somebody's probably fact checking me out there right now going, that's wrong.
And if we're wrong, email us in.
Right?
Yeah.
And I will not say anything about that because I'm always right. Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to try to reserve judgment until I see one in person. There's been the 370Z when it came out, I thought was the ugliest goddamn thing in the world on pictures.
And you know, that's how I felt about the 5th gen Supra too.
Yeah.
It didn't take a good photo.
No.
At least all the early press photos.
And then you saw it in person.
They look great.
Yeah, it looks great.
Still automatic, but they do look great.
Can't mention the Supra without mentioning it's an automatic one.
I have to. Toyota, please build a manual Supra.
So let's see. Let's see what these look like in real life. Also, I want to see somebody like do a render of this thing rallied out.
Yeah. Yeah. With some rally stuff.
Right.
Because
just some
then you have a reason.
Fog lights and mud flaps.
Yeah. And then you have a reason to have all this blacked out stuff.
Right.
Yeah. If you're rallying, that would be cool. And, you know, if this is the alternative to having no WRX,
right,
it's still a WRX.
Right. This still means in the future we have cheap turbo cars to play around with.
That's true. Yeah.
So as long as gasoline still exists and we don't end up in a Mad Max world.
Mad Max world.
So I have no good transition for this. I was going to try to say something about like aftermarket parts for Subaru and then Honda, but I got nothing good. The point is, people are already tuning 11th gen Hondas. I haven't, like I've mentioned before the podcast, I haven't even seen one of these on the street yet.
And you can already buy parts to tune it.
Can already buy parts to tune it.
If so, you can find somebody that'll sell you a Hondetta in this day and age.
Right. Yeah, that's a whole nother issue we need to talk about at some point on the podcast.
Yeah. But,
yeah, Hondetta, famous in the Honda world for doing their tuning devices, the Flash Pro on all the new ones, but they were back in, you know, OBD1 days of doing chip tuning back in, yeah. Hondetta's been around for a while. So they were able to sneak out of the new 11th gen Honda's 1.5 liter an extra, shit, I just lost it, 34 horsepower and 50 foot-pounds of torque.
50 foot-pounds of torque.
And as far as I could see from reading this article, unless I missed something, that's with no aftermarket parts.
That's just tuning.
Just a tune.
See, that's really cool. I mean, 50 foot-pounds of torque for a car that only makes 160 is a
right.
huge percentage.
Yeah.
That's a big bump. That's nothing to sneeze at.
No, that brings it up to 196 horsepower and 213 foot-pounds of torque.
Yeah, which is a lot for a Honda. There are SIs back in the day. People would have killed for that power.
This is very true. Of course, this weighs twice of what those SIs probably weighed, but...
It is the size and shape of an Accord.
It is. It's so it's such a weird thing. Also, because the 11th gen Honda so far is only available in its regular, like, trim, as far as I know, I think you can only get them in a CVT right now.
Okay. Which...
So, we'll see how well... The Honda CVTs seem to be holding up well. But how well do they hold up to extra power?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I've heard that Honda's overbuilding their CVTs.
Which would be a good idea.
Yeah. Which is, you know, because an overbuilt CVT is just an adequate CVT.
Right. This is true.
Because that's Nissan's problem, is that the CVT for the Altima and the Rogue are very similar in size.
Yeah.
Even though the Rogue is designed to go, you know, do mild off-roading.
And, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah,
sure it is.
That's according to Nissan.
According to Nissan, yeah.
And, you know, it's a heavier vehicle, so it puts more stress on the CVT.
Yeah.
But I've heard Honda's doing better on this, and, you know, Honda doesn't like to build cars that aren't reliable.
Yeah.
They don't want their service department overrun with warranty claims.
No. I mean, they had a hard enough time there. They did have their little malaise era with, like, the first-gen Fit had some issues, and the Civic of that generation... Or maybe it's earlier generation, the little van.
Little EP3s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, those things had their issues too. It's relative, you know. They had issues for Hondas.
Right.
You know, compared to like a GM car or something. But yeah, they don't want to go back to that. So they're definitely building their cars up. And luckily, when the hatchback version of the 11th gen comes out, you can get that with a manual.
That's cool. Now it's the same 1.5 liter engine?
Yep.
Okay.
So you can get either the 1.5 or you can still, I think, get a K-Series in these?
Wow.
Maybe. I can't remember what I was reading. Or maybe that was the Accord I'm thinking of. Maybe that was the Accord I was thinking of. You can get the K-Series in.
Well, I know in the Civic Type R, you've obviously got, you know, what's currently the ultimate K-Series.
Right, yeah.
But that's a 10th gen Civic.
Yeah. Which they will be apparently coming out with a new Type R on this 11th gen updated chassis.
Okay.
So I'm really curious, if you haven't seen the 11th gen Honda, Google it real quick, because it's got this weird nose to it.
Yeah.
It almost like a bee stung nose.
It does. I mean, it reminds me a lot of different generations of Accord.
Yeah, it really does.
Is what it looks like.
Yeah. Like I was saying before the show, if you would have said this is an Accord, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm like 100% okay, it's the new Accord.
Yep.
Wow, it's small for an Accord.
Yeah. they did it.
Yeah.
They actually went small, but... But yeah, and there will be an SI variant. There will be the Type R. And what my opinion is, like, the best Honda right now is the hatchback Sport. I really like that. I mean, listen, the Type R is faster, of course.
Right.
So is the SI is probably faster too. But the Sport comes with the same engine as the SI, slightly detuned, and you get the hatchback, and it's way cheaper, and it's like lighter because you have less doodads in it.
Yeah.
It's just that currently the 10th gen Civic, I think the hatchback Sport is the way to
that's
go.
That's the one you'd buy?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I love a hatchback. So
yeah, that's my thing. It's cool. Hatchbacks over everything. Like,
they're useful.
I just, like I said, we just went on a over 2,000 mile road trip and we were camping and all of our stuff was in the back of the Fiesta ST. And it was a 6-person tent, a canopy, totes full of all of our camping stuff. We were glamping. It's like this, we were not roughing it at all. And it all fit in the back of that car.
With no backseat. You unbolted the backseat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even then.
Yeah, that's still impressive. The Fiesta is not a large vehicle.
It really isn't. People would come up to us all the time after we got set up and they're like, you got all that stuff in that little car? I'm like, yep, just barely. You got to Tetris it in there.
That's a Fiesta commercial right there.
It really is. Unfortunately, do not buy a base Fiesta. The transmissions are absolute shit. They have that Ford dual clutch transmission.
Oh, okay.
Like automatic dual clutch.
Yeah.
They got a lawsuit out against them for that transmission. It's so bad.
Wow.
It's like first-gen Nissan CVTs all over again.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust a Ford computer to run that.
Right? It was a lot of software issues. But to go back to the 11th-gen Civic real quick. So we have Honda getting some more power out of the engine, but also the company 27ONE, which is 27WON.
Okay.
Apparently, they're a newer player in the Honda game. I think they started with like the 9th gen or maybe even the 10th gen.
Wow.
But they're already, you know, they got a body in white and they're already developing parts for it, seeing what from the 10th gen fits and whatnot. So if you have an 11th gen Civic, you already have options. I'm curious to see how long it takes before, like, you know, downpipes and exhausts and intakes and all that good stuff to free up intercoolers. Factory intercoolers are always undersized. I don't know why manufacturers do that.
Does Honda run a side mount or a front mount intercooler for their current boosted applications?
I couldn't tell if it's a side or a front off the top of my head. I've had a couple 10th gen Civics in, but I haven't looked at them that close.
Be interested to know. And, you know, I hope that we're, you know, able to keep going forward with these mods because, you know, we haven't even been able to sell headers that delete cats, just worrying about EPA backlash.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. And I tell my customers this all the time because it's not like, as we've said on the podcast, it's not like people like us are responsible for even a large percentage of pollution.
No, our percentage is in the 0.00 range.
Yeah, you know? We just can't afford the lobbyists like trucking and shipping companies can.
Right. So unfortunately, we have to deal with that. But, you know, there's always ways around that. And even then, if you can't really do much... you know, you can't do a catless downpipe, which catted downpipe will serve you just fine anyways. The fact that Honda got an extra 50 foot-pounds of torque out of this thing already with the stock trim shows that there's room here for some bigger numbers.
That's impressive. With
very little mods.
Yeah.
Because I bet you they ran out of... I bet you the air just got too hot. I almost guarantee they just overwhelmed the intercooler.
So the intercooler, you think, will be the bottleneck on this?
I think so. Because the article I saw said they were, from the factory, it's running 13 to 14 PSI.
Okay.
So I'm guessing they upped it to like 16 to 17. And with these little tiny turbos these cars are running these days, once you start upping the PSI too much, you're just outside of its efficiency range. And it just creates a ton of heat.
So you need to upsize the intercooler and probably the turbo too.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the way to do it. It's a bigger turbo on it. But, you know, then you're running into a lot of EPA bullshit.
Yeah.
Because that's considered an emissions device at that point.
Which it's just a shame. I would hate to see. I hate to see how this is affecting our hobby.
Right. Which is why we all need to move to Montana.
Everybody register your cars in Montana.
Right. I will say, after being in South Dakota, I was listening to the Black Hills. I was kind of like, this might be the next place for car people.
You think?
It might be. The Black Hills of South Dakota are gorgeous. The roads out there are amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're more well maintained?
More so than I expected. Yeah, they're very well maintained because it's very touristy and it's a smaller area.
Yeah.
So I feel like they can just afford to. And there is like a little like burgeoning car culture out there. There's a drift crew in South Dakota.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, there's some guys that do autocross stuff, you know, like
So there's some good tracks out there.
No.
No?
No. The fact, I think a lot of the drifting stuff happens at the Thunderdome.
Oh, okay. In Sturgis.
Yeah, in Sturgis.
Okay.
But they do have a drag strip in Sturgis, too. So there's, I'm just saying, and the fact that nobody cares what you do out there. Well, I saw some trucks out there, just like dilapidated trucks, super lifted trucks, trucks rolling coal, like clearly emissions, inspections. Nobody cares about anything out there. Yeah.
I mean, that's good. We need places in the world like that.
Right. Places for us very small percentage of people to go be stupid.
Right. Yeah. We want to destroy tires at an alarming rate.
Yes.
we want to torture our engines until they explode.
And it may not make sense, but that's where we are.
That's what floats our boat.
Right? That's the basis of our religion.
Yeah.
The religion of speed.
Aha.
See, I finally brought it. After so many episodes, I brought it back to the name.
We came full circle.
Yep.
That's our arc.
Brought it back to the back on brand, and this is the final podcast. No, of course not. We always have more to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And
if it's just 80s movies.
Right. So, yeah, look forward to that podcast. But that is going to do it for us talking for today, because it is time to go get some dinner.
Yep, let's go grab something to eat.
Awesome. So I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song off the shit's Colors.
Yeah.
See, I need the script. I'm telling you. Off the album Traveler Part 1.
Yeah.
You can find them at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. See, it came back to me eventually.
There we go.
You can find us online at religiousspeed.co. I got some stuff I'm going to be uploading from the Collar Retro, which is a terrible name, but the 80s car show I went to today.
You didn't like the name? I thought it was a kind of a funny pun.
It's just hard to say.
It is hard to say.
That's my only complaint. It's fine in writing, and it's a funny pun, but then you're like, Collar Retro.
Collar Retro.
Yeah.
Especially saying it like the Coloradians, because they say the color Retro.
Collar Retro.
Yeah.
So that's just, but anyways, point is, there'll be some content on Instagram and Facebook at religionofspeed.co, and hopefully some more stuff coming up on YouTube here soon. And actually, Chris, you actually wrote an article.
Yep. I wrote an article about the inverse relationship between the used prices of Corvettes and imports.
Yeah. So I look forward to seeing that on the website, and that will be at religionofspeed.com. I do have to do some work on that website real quick though, because I've been lagging in getting that thing actually designed properly. So always stuff to do, right?
Yep. It's a never ending thing. Well, you stop working, you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. I just need to quit my day job and do this full time.
There we go. That's the answer to all our problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So people, give me views so that way I can get money, and then we can do this full time. It'll be awesome.
Milwaukee, send us tools.
Yes, that too. All right, heretics. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for listening, and peace out.